This is the State of Things. I'm Phoebe Judge. George Moses Horton was born into slavery in North Carolina in the late 18th century. He was enslaved in rural Chatham County for most of his life, yet he built a remarkable career for himself off the plantation. As a child, George secretly taught himself how to read, and as a teenager, he began making trips to Chapel Hill, where he composed poems for students on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. Horton eventually became the first African-American in the South to publish a book and is the only person to publish a book while living in slavery. A new children's book tells the story of George Moses Horton and celebrates his lasting legacy in North Carolina. Poet, the remarkable story of George Moses Horton, launches tonight at UNC Chapel Hill's Wilson Library. And I'm joined now by the book's author and illustrator, Dawn Tate. Dawn, welcome to The State of Things.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Also joining me is Bob Anthony. He's the curator of the North Carolina Collection at UNC, which houses a number of George Moses Horton's original writings. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you.
So, Bob, tell us a bit more about the story of George Moses Horton. He was born a slave in Northampton County.
He was. The exact date is not known. It's thought maybe about 1797. His owner brought him and his mother and other family members to Chatham County when Horton was like 5 or 6, and they settled, bought farm. They settled about 8 miles south of Chapel Hill, and Horton worked on the farm. It was a small farm, and the Horton men, the owner and his sons, also worked on the farm. But Horton, on weekends, would come to the UNC campus, come to Chapel Hill, and sell fruits and vegetables. And he had that poet's talent, that poet's mind, and students realized that he could recite, and so they began to ask him to compose poetry, and they would purchase them from him.
So let's back up before he even gets to writing the poetry. Don, we know that he was a slave working in the fields all day. He never had any formal schooling, yet he taught himself to read. What do we know about how that happened?
So basically, he found an old spelling book. And I probably should back up a little bit. Actually, what he would do is he would listen to white children as they recited their ABCs. And then as they did that, he would linger nearby and listen. And then soon he could recite the ABCs on his own. Then he found an old spelling book, and his mother gave him a Wesley hymnal. And at night, he would study the spelling book, and he, over time, taught himself to read.
And as you mentioned, Bob, after learning to read, he got himself to the campus of UNC in Chapel Hill. He would write poems for students. You have one of his poems with you. Could you read us an excerpt?
Okay. This is a poem of liberty and slavery, which he wrote and was first published in 1828 in a Lancaster, Massachusetts newspaper where a faculty member's wife had grown up, and she was able to get the poem placed there. The following year, in 1829, it was published in Hope of Liberty, which was the first of two books Horton published while a slavery, and it's entitled Liberty and Slavery. Alas, and am I born for this, to wear this slavish chain, deprived of all created bliss through hardship, toil, and pain. How long have I in bondage lain and languished to be free? Alas, and must I still complain, deprived of liberty? O heaven, and is there no relief this side the silent grave, to soothe the pain, to quell the grief and anguish of a slave? Come, liberty, thou cheerful sound, roll through my ravished ears. Come, let my grief in joys be drowned, and drive away my fears. Say unto foul oppression, cease, ye tyrants, rage no more, and let the joyful trump of peace now bid the vassal soar. Soar on the pinions of that dove which long has cooed for thee, and breathed her notes from Afric's grove, the sound of liberty. O liberty, thou golden prize, so often sought by blood, we crave thy sacred sun to rise, the gift of nature's God. But slavery hide her haggard face, and barbarism fly. I scorn to see the sad disgrace in which enslaved I lie. Dear liberty, upon thy breast I languish to respire, and like the swan unto her nest, I'd to thy smiles retire. O blessed asylum, heavenly balm, unto thy boughs I flee, and in thy shades the storm shall calm with songs of liberty.
That's Bob Anthony, curator of UNC's North Carolina Collection, reading an excerpt of the poetry of George Moses Horton, the first African-American in the South to publish a book. We're talking today about a new children's book based on the life and legacy of George Moses Horton. Bob, will you tell us about tell us more about how Horton came to publish his first book?
Okay. The students and then some of the faculty members and their spouses became intrigued by Horton. Carolyn Hintz, who was the wife of a faculty member, as I mentioned earlier, helped him place his poem, that one I just read, in a Massachusetts newspaper. And she and others, including the president of the university, President Joseph Caldwell, became interested in him. And they helped him secure a publication of that first book in 1829. It was published in Raleigh. There is one extant copy of it, recorded copy. It's unfortunately in the Library of Congress. We would love to have it in Chapel Hill, but it's the only known copy today of that book. And in 1845, he published a second book of poems, the Poetical Works, in which he included an autobiographical sketch. And subscribers, members of the university communities and others, put said they would purchase the book. The idea was that it would sell and he would be allowed to purchase his freedom with the proceeds from that book. For some reason, that did not happen. And as Don and I were talking earlier, there were a number of efforts that Horton made to try to raise money to buy his freedom. His owner in Chatham County essentially was letting Horton purchase his time to come and come to Chapel Hill and sometimes stay on campus and sell his poetry. But for some reason, the owner would not accept some of the offers that were made for Horton to be freed.
Don, you've illustrated a number of children's books, and while this book is a triumph, it's a story of triumph over adversity and a man fighting to have his work heard, it's also certainly about slavery. You've resisted doing work about slavery in the past. Why is that?
You know, I just think that as a kid, I was kind of embarrassed about the subject. You know, I remember, I'd go to class and we would always talk about the great American frontiersmen and the great American presidents and all of the great things that the white people did in history. But then it seemed like whenever we talked about my history, it was always about slavery or the mistreatment of African Americans. And then I remember being in middle school when the miniseries Roots came out. And I'd go to class and, you know, the white kids, they would kind of make funny jokes about, you know, the black characters in the movie. And even the black kids would make jokes. They would, you know, make jokes like, you know, your hair is as nappy as Kunta Kinte and stuff like that. So I just think that I just formed a really negative opinion about the whole topic. So then when I first got into publishing, I said, you know, I'm going to tell those other stories. I'm going to focus on other stories. Then when a friend suggested I write about a man who was once enslaved, who became one of our country's best-known outsider artists, I started to study the topic of slavery, and that's when I realized, you know, these are important stories that need to be told.
So how did you end up writing Horton's story, this particular story?
A friend of mine, actually another friend of mine, suggested that I write. His name is Chris Barton, and he's actually an acclaimed children's book author himself. And we would get together once a month, and we would just critique each other's manuscripts. And I critiqued his story, The Amazing Age of John Roy Lynch, which I went on to illustrate. And then afterwards, he said, Don, you know what? I saw this story on the internet about a once enslaved man in Chapel Hill, who the University of North Carolina was going to name a building after, and you ought to consider writing a story about him. And I had heard of Sojourner Truth and Phyllis Wheatley, but I had never heard of George Moses Horton. And I said, you know, I've got to write that story. So I started researching it that afternoon.
And how much research goes into a book like this? I think, you know, for someone who's as naive as me, I think I see these gigantic 400-page historical books and I think, oh, they must have spent that. Of course, they spent years researching this. And I see a children's book and I think, oh, that must take a little bit of time. I think that that's probably an exactly wrong idea of how it works.
Definitely. I spent a lot of time doing research. I mean, it's a nonfiction children's book, so everything that goes into the story has to be true. I relied mostly on the poetical works of George Moses Horton and the autobiographical sketch. It was a very short sketch, but it provided the basis for the story. And then I used the resources at the University of Chapel Hill's Wilson Library.
The book is full, as you say, of rich historical information. It also has these wonderful, gigantic illustrations that fill the whole entire page. There's no real white space here. The illustrations go from side to side. We talk about the illustration process. You chose to depict the characters as more cartoonish looking. It's somewhat of a contested choice for African-American characters in the illustration world. We talk about the decision to draw the way that you did.
Yeah, when I first got into children's publishing, you know, I was told by editors that my foot in the door would be to illustrate books by or about African-Americans. And so I was told to focus on portraiture, to illustrate African-Americans very realistically, because in the past, African-Americans had been, you know, illustrated with derogatory images. But, you know, I started to think about all of the imagery that competes for our children's attention. You know, you think about SpongeBob, or look at the Cartoon Channel. Some of these books, or excuse me, these cartoon images that compete for our kids' attention. And I said, you know, I kind of want to do whimsical, and I want to come up with a style that is very inviting for kids, and then bring them in and then give them a history lesson. So I chose to go with something that was a little bit softer, a little more whimsical, and I think it kind of softened the blow of the very tough subject matter.
Bob, what do we know about the latter half of George Moses Horton's life?
Well, as I mentioned, in 1845, he published his second book. He tried, as I mentioned, to acquire his freedom through purchase, and that did not succeed. In 1865, when Union troops occupied Raleigh, he is thought to have walked to Raleigh and talked with them, and then came back to Chapel Hill. And when they came to take over Chapel Hill and the campus, he connected with the it was a Michigan cavalry unit. There was a Captain Banks that he connected with, and Banks helped him publish his third book of poetry, which was after the war over in Raleigh. He is then thought to have followed Union troops back to Philadelphia. He is thought to have contributed articles to some newspapers, not signed. We can't find which ones he contributed. And he lived there for several years. There were several prominent university alums who visited him while in Philadelphia. But we don't know exactly when he died. We don't know when he was buried, where he was buried. But I hope folks will come tonight to Wilson Library, where they will hear Don talk about his book and have opportunity to purchase his book. And I'll close by saying I'm delighted to see that Don used the term remarkable story of George Moses Horton in the title, because if you think of North Carolina writers, I don't think you can find of anyone who overcame more obstacles to publish than George Moses Horton.
Well, don't close just yet, because I have one more question for you. But and that's only, and then I'll let you close.
Okay.
But that's, how is George Moses Horton commemorated in North Carolina and on the UNC campus?
Okay. I think scholars have known of Horton for many, many years, but we're hoping that through efforts, more recent efforts, that the general public will become more familiar with him. A few years ago, there was a residence hall named George Moses Horton Residence Hall on the south campus of UNC Chapel Hill. Prior to that, in 1996, the North Carolina Literary Hall of Fame, in its first ceremony, inducted 15 writers posthumously, and Horton was one of the 15. Other writers a little better known would be like Thomas Wolfe and Paul Green. And then maybe 10 years ago, the State Office of Archives and History erected a highway historical marker south of Chapel Hill on 15501 going toward Pittsburgh. And I think Don was there the other day and said he took his picture there. So there are some monuments on the landscape to Horton now that were not there a few years ago.
Don, you're involved in efforts to diversify children's literature. Will you tell us about that and how this book fits into that bigger picture?
Yeah, a few years ago, several other authors and I, we formed a blog called The Brown Bookshelf, which seeks to highlight authors and illustrators who are creating, you know, books for children. Because so often it seems like our books kind of go under the radar in the publishing industry. And our flagship initiative is called 28 Days Later. And during the month of February, we highlight an African-American book creator every day of the month in the form of an interview. And then because of my work there, I was invited to join the team of the We Need Diverse Books, which is a grassroots organization of children's books lovers that advocates essential changes in the publishing industry to produce and promote literature that reflects and honors the lives of all young people. So Definitely. This story, poet, is a perfect fit. You know, whenever I illustrate a children's book, the one thing that I think about is that person of color, that African-American child who maybe doesn't get to see themselves represented in a book. And I think that is such an important thing for all kids to see themselves.
Just quickly before we go, I want you to talk about last night's event and the fact that you met some of George Moses Horton's ancestors.
That was like the coolest experience. When I first conceived to write and illustrate this book, I said that if it was ever acquired and if it ever was published, I wanted to be able to bring the book right back here to this community and launch it. And so to be able to meet some of Horton's descendants and to have so many of them turn out to celebrate this this book with me, it meant the world to me. And I was told that many of them are going to return to tonight's event as well. And I have a special book that I have packaged with a special goose quill feather and a goose quill pen and ink that I'm going to present to the family.
Must be a wonderful thrill for them to see their...
You could just see the pride on their faces. It was written all over their faces. So,
that's author and illustrator Don Tate. His new book, Poet, The Remarkable Story of George Moses Horton, launches tonight at UNC Chapel Hill's Wilson Library at 5 p.m. Don, thanks for joining us.
I'm honored to be here.
Bob Anthony was also with us. He's the curator of the North Carolina Collection at UNC, which houses a number of George Moses Horton's original writings. Thanks very much, Bob.
Thank you.
You can find out more about George Moses Horton and tonight's book launch event at our website, stateofthings.org. That's the State of Things for today. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is a technical director. Al Wadarski is sitting in today. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Phoebe Judge.